Oyez, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session. Pursue it to adjournment.
Thank you, be seated. The orders of the court are posted in the clerk's office and available for inspection. Three causes will be submitted by oral argument this morning. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Charles Getke and others versus Houston Lighting and Power Company from Travis County. Randall F. Black, C.O. Daniel, and Lisa Janine Sutter versus Victoria Lloyd's Insurance Company from Brazoria County. And Wilfred Jackson versus S&P Leasing Corporation and others from Harris County. Counsel in each of these three causes are advised that the arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court, and you may make application with the clerk of our court to hear tapes of those arguments if you should desire. If you are a counsel in the second or third cause, you do not need to remain in the courtroom while earlier matters are being presented, but we ask that you remain nearby so that we can proceed to your matter without delay if we reach it. The court will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these three arguments, but we will complete the submission of these three cases before we take our lunch recess. The court is now ready to hear argument from petitioner in the cause of Getke versus Houston Lighting and Power.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeffrey L. Hart and Mr. James Bruce Bennett will present argument for the petitioner. Mr. Hart will open.
May it please the court, this is an appeal of an administrative order from the Public Utilities Commission. The primary issue that we're here on today involves the form of that order. That is, whether that order is technically proficient under the Administrative Procedure Act or the APA. The courts below have held that order to be fatally defective and have generally remanded the case to the Commission for further proceedings. Our contention is that the order is not defective, that it does comply with the requirements of the APA and of this court's decisions in Charter Medical and Allied Bank.
Doesn't have anything to do with substance.
The courts below have not reached the merits of the appeal. They never got to the substantial evidence review. We submit that the case should be remanded to the courts below so they can proceed with that review. This case involves or began with the application by Houston Lighting and Power Company, HL&P, to construct a high voltage transmission line. To put this in context, I have a map I'd like to direct the court's attention to, if I may. This is an exhibit out of the administrative record that shows the existence of the proposed line. In this area, we have Brenham, we have Hempstead, we have Waller. On this map,
Counsel, do you have a copy of that map available for us?
No, sir, I do not, for the individual court members.
Kind of hard for us weak-eyed folks to see it over there.
Yes, sir. I understand that. The purpose is not to get into the details of it, since the courts below did not get into the substantial evidence, but just to put it in context for the court to see.
Thank you.
The proposed route that they submitted to the PUC ran into this area just inside of the Harris County line, across Waller County, across the Brazos River, up through Austin County, and terminating in Washington County here.
Where is Navasota?
Navasota would be up north.
Okay, so it's not anywhere near 105?
Excuse me, sir.
Highway 105?
I'm not familiar with that highway by number, but Navasota is considerably north from this area. This is 290 running this area here.
Okay, thank you.
I will reference this map briefly later. We represent the landowners in this area, approximately 700 residents, who intervened in the application of HL&P. We hired experts to evaluate the application and opposed the application on two grounds. One, that based on our review of the data, the line was not needed. And two, even if it was needed, this routing was improper. After extensive evidentiary hearings, extensive briefing, and three hearings before the commission, the application was denied by a 2-1 vote. The majority's basis for denial was that HLMP did not adequately consider alternative routing alternatives to the route that it selected. That is, it did not consider existing rights-of-way or paralleling of existing lines. The orange lines on this exhibit are existing transmission lines or the lines that existed at the time the application was filed. The issues before the court today are, is the failure to consider alternative routes a proper basis to deny the application? And secondly, if it is, does that basis require underlying findings of fact under the APA pursuant to this court's decision in Charter Medical? The first question, I think, is easily answered yes, that it is a proper basis by the Sam Houston Electric Co-op case. Precisely the same type of issue in that case, the Court of Appeals held that was a proper basis to deny a utility's application for a transmission line. Second question, does that...
Is that part of a larger factor, the need versus the detriment, or is it just a single factor that the PUC could use to deny an application?
We think it's a single factor separate from the balancing as envisioned by the statutory bases in 54C of the Utility Act.
Which way did the PUC go in this case? Using it as a separate factor or using it as part of the balance?
We consider a finding as a separate factor. I think as the order evidences and as a dissent found, there were no findings under 54C.
The paragraph 2 says that the need outweighs the detrimental impact because of this reason. Why isn't that a part of the balance?
Well, the way we understood the order was the commission could not make that ultimate finding on the weighing because of the inadequacy of the consideration of alternatives. It was a non-statutory basis that the commission decided the case upon.
Well, the question whether need outweighs detriment, is that a statutory or a non-statutory basis?
That would be statutory as we read 54C.
Well, the PUC finds in paragraph 2 that the Houston Lighting and Power failed to meet its burden of proving that the need outweighs the detriment. Why isn't that a statutory finding?
We do not consider that a finding positively or negatively under that statutory basis. Our assessment of the order is the commission is saying it cannot get to the point to make a statutory finding positively or negatively because of the non-statutory basis, that is, the failure to consider alternatives.
But whether need outweighs detriment, that's a statutory finding, whether it does.
Yes, sir.
And you're saying the PUC just couldn't make that finding either way because of the failure of HLMP to discharge its burden of proof.
It's more than just discharge its burden of proof. It did not consider this additional factor. We think the two findings need to be read together so that the courts and the parties can understand the true basis for the decision. This application was filed back in 1983 to construct this particular line, which is a double circuit 345,000 volt transmission line. It's one that is suspended on the giant steel towers. The primary purpose was to import power to HLMP from the city of Austin and the city of San Antonio. I should point out that the power still could be imported without this line. It's just that in the case of outages that may occur elsewhere on the grid, that the utility said they needed this additional path. Our assessment of the need has been proved correct by history. HLMP has not imported the power and has since allowed the contracts to expire. However, we only got one vote on the commission that need was not present. On the routing issue, we did get two
commissions. Has allowed the contract to expire?
Yes, sir.
So they're not going to build the line?
Allowed the contracts with the City of Austin and the City Public Service Board of San Antonio to expire. Those contracts expired at the end of 1987. That was the primary basis for the line. They had some ancillary bases, but the primary basis they went in on was Houston is growing so fast, it's outstripping the need, our ability to supply power. We need to buy it from Austin, so we need another route.
So is the case moot?
We attempted to make that argument below, and it was not, we did not have the opportunity because of the way the case was decided on this peremptory issue.
Well, what's your position? Is it moot or not?
We think that this court, we would invite the court to consider the case of the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe case versus the United States, where because of changed economic conditions, that involved the Depression case, that an administrative order can be rendered moot and denied by a reviewing court.
Are they going to go ahead and bail?
I can't answer that question. They're still insisting on going forward, so I assume they still have the intent. Incidentally, there were other reasons they gave. They were considering building a power plant in this area, known as Lower Mill Creek. That has since been canceled. They said they also needed to connect to another plant up in this area called Tex Plant, which has since been canceled. The last need was we want to connect up to Limestone, which is up in this area. Of course, we say we invest to supply north of the property. The record we submit is clearly stale at this time, and that was one reason we were asking the court below to allow new evidence to be submitted should the case be sent back. And alternatively, the Atchison, Topeka case could be used for the reviewing court to take judicial notice of economic changes. As I stated, this exhibit shows existing power lines in the area. The only paralleling that was done was the proposed route was right here for approximately 800 feet. During the entire 46-mile trek, only 800 feet used existing rights of way. Our expert came up with alternatives that were submitted in pre-filed testimony on how further paralleling could be done to minimize the environmental impact, and also would be less costly than this particular proposal they had. After the commission's decision, HLMP appealed to the district court. The case was assigned to Judge Joe Dibrell here in Travis County. During the appeal, the Court of Appeals reversed Judge Dibrell in the Allied Bank case. Based on that decision and his reversal, he then reversed the PUC in this case based upon the Court of Appeals opinion in Allied Bank.
Did he say that anywhere in an order?
He says that in the transcript of the proceeding and in his letter rulings that are part of the record in this case. And as I stated, the merits of appeal were not reached. We appealed to the Court of Appeals. During the pendency of that appeal, this court reversed the Court of Appeals decision in Allied Bank. The Court of Appeals, we submit, did not heed this court's decision and instead affirmed the trial court on the technical inadequacies of the commission's order. We submit that the court below has continued with its improper hyper-technical approach to reviewing administrative orders that is in violation of this court's decisions in Charter Medical and Allied Bank.
Well, the failure of an agency to explain why it's doing what it's doing is hardly technical, is it? Doesn't that go to the whole decision-making process?
The technical nature that we are saying they went off on erroneously is dissecting the order to the point of claiming we can't determine the nature of the decision. We think if you look at the decision, it's clear the basis for the decision. That is, the utility did not consider alternate routes. What the Court of Appeals did...
They don't actually find that, though, do they? They just say they didn't prove that they didn't consider all of them enough.
Well, the second finding that relates to that, I believe, states that they did not fail to adequately consider available alternatives, existing rights of way and or paralleling existing transmission lines.
You think that's what paragraph 3 says? that the commission found that they didn't do it?
They did not adequately consider the alternatives to their proposed route. Yes, sir.
Can you point that, I hate to take you from your argument, can you point to me that language in finding number three?
It failed to convince the commission that the methodology employed adequately considered alternative routes using existing rights-of-way and or parallel lines.
My point is they didn't find that HLMP didn't do it. They just didn't find that they were they just weren't convinced that they had. Is that right?
I suppose I fail to see the distinction between the two points, but I see the court's.
Well, it seems to me the distinction is critical to your argument. If the commission is finding that HLMP did not consider alternate routes, that's one thing. If they're just not making a finding either way, that's another thing.
Well, we consider this to rise to the level of a finding, regardless of, especially when considered in connection with the paragraph 2, aside from the technicality of how the words are placed, we consider that a finding that they did not undertake the non-statutory basis of adequately considering the alternatives. In fact, the way we submit the approach to this case should be is to look at the order as a whole and determine whether Section 16, the purposes of Section 16 in the APA are satisfied, that is, whether we can determine the basis for the court's decision. And we submit that that clearly can be done, reading these two paragraphs, and in case there's any ambiguity, read the dissent, look at the hearing transcripts. Secondly, is that basis permissible? Under San Houston Electric Co-op, yes it is. It's a non-statutory basis that is permissible for a decision. Thirdly, does it require additional findings? Because it's non-statutory, it does not require additional findings. That should be sufficient for the initial examination of the order. Then the court can go to the substantial evidence examination to determine whether or not there are facts in the record to support that determination.
How is a substantial evidence review going to do any good in this case? The commission says they were not convinced. So how can you show by substantial evidence that they were or they weren't convinced?
Well, you can certainly show, as we did, specific routes that weren't considered. The way they structured their criteria, the way they structured the restrictions on what could be considered by the routing people, did not convince the commission that they considered the alternatives. I don't think it's the burden of the commission to point out specifically all conceivable alternatives that should be considered. As the court held in the Sam Houston case, the finding that alternatives were not considered was a sufficient basis for denying the application. It's hard to go through every conceivable idea that the utility could do or could not do. And I don't think that should be a requirement in an administrative order such as this.
Why didn't the PUC just find HLMP failed to consider alternate routes?
Certainly, if I were drafting the order, I could have come up with better language. I don't think that in the position of a reviewing court, we should state because the language wasn't precisely as might be desired, that it's deficient. I think what you need to do is to read the order as a whole and see if it does convey the true basis for the holding. I'm not holding this order out as a model of draftsmanship. What I'm saying is, under the APA, it is sufficient on first blush, as technically requiring complying with this court's rulings on how to construe orders. Basically, what the commission did is succinctly and sufficiently define the basis for the decision. And I would submit that that type of succinct decision should be commended by this court. We think it's clear the reason for the decision is very well apparent from this order. If this court were to hold that further evidentiary recitations were necessary, I think we may find ourselves back in a situation with orders similar to the Health Facilities Commission cases where findings run on for hundreds and hundreds of paragraphs in order to attempt to reach a result. We think the agencies, if they reach a result, state the decision directly instead of having a lot of alternative and additional findings to burden the order and muddle the true basis for the decision. We think that with the proper analysis under the APA, the purposes of 16B are satisfied. We know the basis for the order. The parties knew the basis of the order. They certainly appealed on that basis and briefed it extensively in the courts below. And this court can review whether that basis is a sufficient basis for denial. And we think it is because it's non-statutory under Sam Houston. If, however, this court should find that the order is technically deficient, we submit that the proper remedy would have been a limited remand to the trial court, to the PUC to enter the necessary or missing findings. We'll stand on our brief on that particular point. Instead of an open-ended remand, we think the most efficient way to handle that would be by a limited remand. There are two other issues the Court of Appeals wrote on that if this court remands, we think need to be addressed in some way or another so as not to allow them to become law of the case and create further error below. We think they have erroneously discussed the issue of discovery and the peremptory denial of discovery by us. We stand on our brief on those issues. They erroneously tell that it was proper to deny us the opportunity to present a motion under 19D2 to reopen the record because of new evidence. We stand on our brief on those issues on why that denial was improper. And thirdly, they held that the trial court could not consider our cross point as to why the order could be upheld on an alternative ground. The court held we had to prosecute our own appeal. We statutorily could not prosecute because we were not aggrieved. We think this court's decisions in the appellate cases on how to present and preserve error by cross appeal should be applied in the review of appeals from administrative orders as well. And we would refer the court to our brief on that particular issue.
Do you join Justice Powers urging us to reconsider Charter Medical and to adopt the definition of handcuffed in the case of the PUC with regards to what statutory language means?
Address his...
In a footnote, he urges us to reconsider our definition and take the task and once again cite his large article in this area and ask that to reconsider what we're going to Charter Medical.
Of course, that invitation is not new. I think it occurs in several of his opinions.
Yes.
And we think it's highly inappropriate. We think the law is well settled. We think Allied Bank could not have been more clear. Perhaps it needs to be made clear again. The problem is we have a situation where, depending on the panel that someone draws in the courts below, the standard of review that the parties are faced to go through is different. We would urge the court to make very clear the standards of judicial review of APA orders. As said in our brief, we have suggested ways that this court can define the method of review using the standards of statutory construction in conjunction with the review process to avoid the type of improper review that we submit that the court below has undertaken. We think the invitation should be declined.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent, Houston Lighting and Power Company.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert J. Heron will make argument from respondent.
May it please the court, let me begin by saying that HL&P and particularly in myself in this argument today don't really find it necessary to get into the ongoing discussion which Justice Powers of the Austin Court attempts to continue to carry on about Charter Medical Presbyterian Hospital. That's a matter between Justice Powers and the law reviews or the world or whatever. I don't think it has anything to do with this case. to demonstrate that, let me point out at the beginning that this is a case in which the commission itself, the three-member commission, reached a different view than had been recommended by the examiners. And as the court is well aware, particularly at the Public Utility Commission, very lengthy examiners' reports are submitted to the commission for consideration, and those examiners' reports include detailed proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. So a difficult position is created when the commission disagrees, because then the commission does not have before it a set of findings and conclusions supporting the decision that they can adopt. But it is still necessary for the commission to comply with 16B of the APA and make findings and conclusions. I point that out simply because that is the circumstance that I think has led to many of the problems in this case. Let me point out also a little bit about the history of the case. And if I may, it will not improve the legibility of it, really, but we have another map, which again is from the record, and it demonstrates very basically, in the first place, we need to turn it up to the right side. Glad I noticed that. It demonstrates that here we have...
Doesn't make that much difference to some of them.
But I can indicate sort of the general areas here, which I think will be helpful. This is Zenith, and this is Salem. And the question in this case is sort of out of a Horton Foote play or something. How do you get from Salem to Zenith? And Salem over here is connected with one arm of the electric utility grid in Texas, to which all utilities are connected, generally running up from Waco, Austin, San Antonio. Zenith is connected to the further eastern arm, which goes down through Houston, connects with the South Texas Project. It is necessary for the reliable operation of that electric grid throughout the state of Texas for there to be efficient communications between these utilities. In the event one of them has an outage, then power needs to be channeled to meet that outage. And it can happen anywhere, of course.
So this case is not moved?
Absolutely not. And HL&T fully intends to construct this line. To do so, it has to get a certificate. And that requires, under Section 54, a statutory balancing by the PUC of the need on the one hand versus possible adverse impacts on the environment on the other hand.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understood that. Are you saying that this central, I don't know how you describe that central grid that goes from San Antonio to Austin on up to Waco, which was the western, and then the eastern, there is no connection now?
There is a connection toward the south. The testimony in this record is
south of this point.
Oh yes, essentially through the South Texas Nuclear Project. The testimony in the record is that a further interconnection is necessary toward the northern end to establish reliability of the grid. It's not just a matter of sending purchased power from Austin or San Antonio to HL&T. But we prevailed on that point before the commission. Commissioner Thomas adopted the recommended findings by the examiner on the issue of need. And Commissioner Campbell, I believe, as I understand the order, concur in those findings.
Well, don't you read finding number two to say that you did not discharge your burden of proving that need outweighs detriment?
I Well, finding number two says what it says, and it does say we fail to meet its burden of proving. But that gets precisely to the issue in this case.
Well, before you get there,
yes.
How do you explain that Commissioner Thomas could adopt findings that need outweigh detriment and then find that it didn't?
Well, of course, that's impossible for him to do that. If that is what he did, and it may not be clear, but the question before the court and before Judge Deverell and before the Court of Appeals is what should be done with this case. And as I understand the arguments by my friends here on the other side, they say this is a stale record and it ought to be remanded to the district court for substantial evidence review based on that stale record. It's our position, and it's Judge Deverell's position and the Court of Appeals' position, that the proper disposition of this case is to send it back to the PUC. Because in the present state of the record, this case evades judicial review. It is impossible for a court to really understand exactly what this commission was finding. It made no findings that can be judged on the basis of a substantial evidence review against a record. As Your Honor earlier pointed out, the question of whether a burden of proof or whether the commission has been convinced of this, that, or the other evades the commission's obligation to make a finding. If we fail to meet our burden of proof, then it was the obligation of the commission to say and to find that HLNP did not adequately consider alternative routes.
In other words, your position is they can't be in the middle.
They can't be in the middle.
They either have to find yes or no.
Unfortunately, lots of people would like to be in the middle, but as this court is well aware, sometimes you have to decide cases. Now, what I've shown here in orange on this map are the alternate routes that had been considered by the independent company retained by HLNP to determine how you should get from Salem to Zenith. How is it that a court can decide whether there is substantial evidence supporting a finding that though that does represent an adequate consideration of alternative route, or a finding that it does not? There is no finding. The history of the case, if it pleases the court, is very illuminating. HLNP had a prior proceeding before the docket, before the PUC, in which it wanted to build a line from Zenith to a point up here north of Salem. That docket, of course, created protests, understandably. There are people who own land in that area, and they do not want these transmission lines across that land. That's what makes this a tough case. Somebody is going to have to be offended, hurt, harmed, in their view, if the public need for this transmission line outweighs any adverse environmental considerations. But what did the PUC do with that case? They said in that case, the earlier case, we don't think that you've made a sufficient showing of alternate routes. So this proceeding was then filed in 1983, 6 years ago. HLNP hired an independent company, said, look, we need to get from Salem to Zenith, go out and figure out what the alternates are. And that company came in and presented half a dozen witnesses, environmentalists, engineers, historians. That company recommended these lines, these routes. And the particular route was one that would come out from Zenith on land that HLNP already owned, goes up here, avoids Belleville, avoids the populated areas, cuts across here, and goes up to Salem. Now, the question before the commission was whether the need for this line
under Section 54B, outweigh any adverse economic or environmental impacts under 54C.
Can the commission consider consideration of alternate routes in making that determination?
Commissioner Campbell was convinced that they could not, because she had just won a case called the Frost case before the Austin Court of Appeals when she was an assistant attorney general, in which she successfully maintained that position.
Well, Frost holds, though, isn't it, that the PUC doesn't have to consider it?
That's what Judge Gamage said in the subsequent Sam Houston case, but...
Isn't that what Frost said?
Well, it's not what Commissioner Campbell considered Frost to.
What did you say?
I think it's possible to reconcile Sam Houston and Frost. I think that it's difficult to argue that the commission cannot consider some factor. I think the legislature has created the commission to make this balance.
Can it consider it as a non-statutory factor?
I think it can, yes.
So even if it concluded somehow, without looking too closely at the logic of this, that need outweighed detriment, it could still deny the application simply because it was convinced that the alternate routes were not considered.
But of course it did not do that. It avoided making any decision. And the way this came up, let me
point this out again. We had the hearing, or HLMP had the hearing. The matter came up on appeal to the commission. Of course, there were landowners there that said, we don't like this line going through here. Isn't there some other place that it can go? And what did the commission do? They remanded the matter to the examiners to consider further routes beyond these. The examiner then set up an enormously convoluted procedure where if additional routes somewhere out over here were considered, then the other landowners needed to be notified. And a mechanism was devised which seemed like that this case would be able to go on well into the next century. That order was appealed to the commission. That's when the commission split three ways.
Commissioner Rawson was in favor of denying the line on the basis of need. She's in the dissenting position. Commissioner Campbell thought the Frost case prevented consideration of alternate routes. Commissioner Thomas, who wanted simply to avoid having to decide and had voted to remand it for consideration of further routes, just said, well, I'm not going to decide. I'm going to say I'm not convinced, and therefore the order is denied.
In a trial of an ordinary case in the judicial system, the fact finder may decide that. The fact finder may conclude that the person who has the burden of proof simply has not met it by a preponderance of the evidence. Why can't the agency do that here?
Because the agency has to make a finding, and if the agency is persuaded that the applicant has failed to meet the burden of proof, then the order needs to be to the effect that adequate consideration of alternate routes has not taken place. Then that decision can be reviewed on appeal. I think if they had made that finding on appeal, we would be able to demonstrate from this record that there is no substantial evidence to support such a conclusion. But don't you see the danger in this case is that if the commission or administrative agencies generally are allowed to insert this burden of proof or failure to convince idea in front of their findings, then their decisions become impervious from judicial review. You can imagine the situation in which people are applying to an agency time after time, as has happened here, only to be told, well, you haven't got it yet. Go back, you haven't convinced us. That is not the system of administrative law and judicial review that the legislature contemplated in 16B.
And if there were an appeal from that order, no matter who appealed, your position is that no court could ever say that the finding was wrong because all they found is that they weren't convinced.
That's right. and 16B, and this court's decisions. I don't even want to mention a case that was ever decided by Justice Powers on findings. I want to look solely at decisions of this court.
Very wise.
Charter Medical, we've heard. What about Presbyterian Hospital, written by Justice Gonzalez? Reversed a commission order in a certificate of need case because the findings were inadequate. Those were negative findings. Just because the commission denies an application, it doesn't mean that it's relieved from the burden to make findings. Sufficient Justice Gonzalez concluded for the court that we cannot fairly and reasonably say that these remaining findings, after reviewing all of them, support the commission's conclusions on the ultimate or statutory criteria. Now, what are the ultimate or statutory criteria here? The ultimate one, I believe we can all agree, is the balance. Did this order ever address the balance? Did it say, here is a need, but on the other hand, we have the following adverse factors? And did it confront the tough decision of whether this need outweighs the balance? That's what the legislature created PUC to do. No. They simply found need, and then when you get over here on the adverse side, they just say, well, we're not convinced, and no court can ever test that, that you adequately considered alternate routes. So this is not like any case that this court has ever found to meet the test of Section 16B. This is, if it is permitted, an avenue by which administrative agencies can prevent judicial review of their decisions and avoid so the sometimes unpleasant job of making those decisions.
In Charter Medical, the problem was that the court might not be able to tell why the agency did what they did. Your position is, in this case, you can tell what they did, it's just that they didn't make a decision one way or the other.
And you can't, they did not make the findings required by Section 16B under Sections 54, B, and C. They did not do the balance.
Do you agree that the applicant has the burden of proving that they have chosen, that they have fully considered alternate routes?
That's a difficult question for me to answer. I think the applicant has the burden on the whole case. When you're dealing with a balancing, it may be in a given case that the need for a particular line is so overwhelming that the question of consideration of alternate routes is not as weighty as it would be otherwise. I don't think you can really approach it as saying, well, you had a burden on each one of these fact findings. I think the agency is the one that needs to make that balance. This court, in a unanimous opinion this summer in the AT&T case, dealt with a situation in which this same agency made findings. And in that case, the court's opinion pointed out, in the first place, that you need, the court is allowed to give appropriate consideration to the findings in the examiner's report. And quite often, that provides a very helpful guide to understanding the basis for an agency's decision. But bear in mind the circumstances here where there is no examiner's report to help this agency out. The court also made the point, and I'm not sure whether this is, I believe this is in Justice Mosey's concurrence, that in that case was not one which required such as a certificate of need case, which required the court to make statutory findings on specific statutory factors. That also is an important point. 54B and 54C require affirmative or negative findings on these to support these statutory conclusions, not simple statements that the burden of proof has not been met. The other points that have been raised by the petitioners, I think mistakenly view the role of the district court. The district court should not take evidence. The district court, and not even this court, should decide whether the need balances or outweighs the adverse impacts. Those are matters that are for the commission to decide. And when the commission has come up with a three-way split like this, in an order that defies judicial review, the proper procedure is to remand this case to the PUC. The commission can then decide whether the record is stale, whether additional evidence is necessary, all of the issues that the petitioners for some reason want the district court to address. So I submit earnestly to the court that this is not a chapter in Justice Powers' war. This is a situation, a unique situation, in which an agency divided three different ways in a difficult case simply failed to make the statutory findings at all.
You have not cited another case like this one in that respect. Are you aware of it?
I hope I never see another one. I don't think there is. And I think this court's affirmance of the judgments below would be entirely consistent with the statutory requirements to enable the commission to adopt this burden of proof or failure to convince standard as a means of avoiding compliance with 16B and avoiding judicial review of administrative decisions would be a serious setback to the development of administrative law in this case, in this state. And for that reason, I urge the court to affirm the judgments of the district court and the Court of Appeals, even the Court of Appeals, and let this case go back to the PUC. If there are any further questions, I'd be happy to try to deal with them.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court, Mr. Bruce Bennett will offer further arguments for the petition.
I'd like to do my response to what Mr. Herron has said, and first a broad response, and then I'll answer specifically, item by item, what he went through. The issue before the Court is really, does this order state the basis of the PUC's decision? And I believe the Austin Court and HLMP is fundamentally missing the object and the issue here. The requirement is of the APA that the final order state and reflect the agency's intent, that is the basis for its decision, so that that basis can be identified and the reviewing court can then determine whether that basis is arbitrary or capricious or if a finding is made that it's not supported by substantial evidence. Now, how does one determine whether the agency order states the basis for decision? We think you're supposed to use the law in Texas has been for a long time that agency orders are construed like statutes. You use the presumptions that are applicable to statutes, and you use the rules of construction that are applicable to statutes. And this permits you to make sure that the substance of the order is determined, and you give preference to substance over the form, despite any draftsmanship problems. I agree with Mr. Hart. This order is not a model, of at least the majority part, of draftsmanship. But by viewing the order as a whole, you can determine the basis for the decision. I think it's also helpful to recall that Commissioner Thomas and Commissioner Rawson are not lawyers. Commissioner Campbell is a lawyer, and I think she set it out what the issue was and why and the basis for it. She says the sole issue has always been whether the applicant considered alternative routes. The transcript shows that it was applicant's failure to make this showing which formed the basis of the denial of the application, and that's it. That's
so
the basis.
So why didn't
for
they just find that they didn't show that they didn't consider alternate routes?
Your Honor, that's what they did find.
Well,
the
they
wording,
say that they find that they weren't convinced.
Well, I believe, again, that gets back, let's give it substance over form. The failure to convince, I mean, I think in effect what they're saying, you failed to convince us that you adequately considered alternative routes. And they did, and that is equivalent to a fact you didn't consider alternative routes. You haven't convinced us that you did that. Therefore, you did not do it. And I think it's pretty obvious when we look at the alternative routes that were available. And you've got to put this also, one of the things about using the rules of construction is you put the order in the context of the proceeding. Look at the record, look at what was before the commission. You have a historic and beautiful area. Anybody who's ever been to this part of the country knows what we're talking about. Where a lot of early Texas history occurred, it's one of the most beautiful parts of the state. There are miles and miles of alternative routes. Now, what is the preferred route? It's this one here. It's 46 miles long. It uses 800 feet of existing right-of-way out of the miles and miles that exist there. What about the other? They had two or three other routes that they preferred. Every one of them was deficient. You had the North Central route was 47 miles long. It used no existing transmission line right-of-way. Did use a mile and a half of pipeline right away.
But with respect to the aesthetics, Commissioner
yes.
Campbell points out that the PUC does not find that there's any problem that the aesthetic detriment outweighs the need. She said neither has the majority found that the proposed route violated any of the 54C mm-hmm. criteria.
Well, I believe what the problem with the majority, Your Honor, was this. They're saying we've got a historic and beautiful area here. We have to weigh need versus harm. We cannot make that determination yet because we do not feel that HLMP has adequately considered the miles of the existing right-of-way, utilizing those existing right-of-ways. We're not at that point where we can make that determination yet. It was pointed out, and no one disputes this, when you open up a new line over virgin territory like they're proposing to do, you are impacting the environment. A Brazos River crossing, which this new line would make, a new crossing, is very detrimental to the environment.
But
no one disputes that.
But Mr. Bennett, if they say they can't make that determination,
yes.
and then they deny the application,
right.
then the applicant can't proceed any further to try to make it. We can't get judicial review. There's no further proceeding to attack that order.
I would disagree with you on that, Your Honor. They can make that sign. They can say that's arbitrary or capricious. That finding is contrary to the evidence that they introduced. That's what HLMP did. They've got a 49-page brief. You've got to understand this. When we came into Judge Deverell's court before we got there, but we were preparing the briefs, they come in with a 49-page brief. This problem with the findings that you're talking about, Your Honor, is in one paragraph on page 38 of that brief. That's after they have briefed and made the argument that this finding is arbitrary and capricious and it's not supported by substantial evidence. Only after Allied Bank came down, and it came down, I believe, about 5 days before we had the oral argument in front of Judge Deverell. That's when this issue suddenly rose out from paragraph 1 on page 38 as being the dominant basis. They have done it. They know what the basis is, Your Honor. That has happened here. And I believe that's where we are. They've made that finding.
You don't have much time. I'm curious. What is it you want them to do? Send it back to the district court and report.
Your Honor, two things I think need to happen. Y'all need to write an opinion that obviously reverses and remands this case to the district court. To have the district court go ahead and entertain their arguments that this finding, this order, is arbitrary and capricious. They can make all their arguments then, which they've got in their brief already, that this finding that they failed to adequately consider right-of-way is arbitrary and capricious. It's contrary to the evidence. They'll tell you all about their Commonwealth study and how great it was and that they could attack our expert. That's where that could happen, and that's what we're asking the court to do.
I thought Mr. Hart was saying that determination could not be made because of a stale record, and a lot of things have happened since.
That's the first option we would have. That's true. We do think this is a stale record. We've made that argument the whole time. The main way that I view the Ashton Topeka case, and I think what Mr. Hart is saying, is we were saying if you're going to send this back to the commission, we've got a record here and the studies that they had to back up the need for this line are based on data from 1981. We're here almost to 1990, and that is the staleness argument. We've had tremendous changes in the economy, and as Mr. Hart told you, a lot of these plants that this line was proposed to serve, they're off the charts. But we would also, for the benefit of the administrative law bar, for the Austin Court of Appeals, we would ask that in your opinion, you spell out clearly the analysis used to determine whether the basis of the order has been adequately stated. And again, I would say that, that we would ask you to make the point to the Austin Court and to the bar generally, the order is presumed valid. The agency is presumed to have followed the law. The order is reviewed as a whole, and you're not to dissect the parts and analyze each little part separate from the entire order. That if there is a construction that renders the order valid, that must be adopted, just as a statute is to be construed to be valid if a construction will allow that. That the administrative record is to be used in order to put the order in context, the words that are used in the order and the descriptions. If those things are done, I believe that will, I think the Court of Appeals is missing that point. I believe that's what's happened right now. They're jumping into 16B.
Haven't we said all that before?
Well, you've got it in different opinions. And I think we, if you see from the pages in our brief where we discussed this, I've drawn together to put it in this thing. You've never put it in Charter Medical or in Presbyterian Hospital. I think if you were to do that now and preface this opinion that these are the rules that apply, that this order is to be presumed valid.
And that would satisfy Justice Powers?
I think that would, Your Honor. I think that would make it harder for Justice Powers to take off. A quick word about Presbyterian Hospital, Your Honor. There were negative findings on the statutory factors. Here, we have a finding on a non-statutory factor. That's the distinction on that case. And again, as far as the unfairness to the applicant, there is no unfairness here. They knew what to do. They did it. They just seized on Allied Bank at the last minute to try to get this case reversed. As far as the connections, I believe Mr. Heron talked about they needed to make some connections with this line. He said to the south, there's also connections already existing in the north.
Would you be terribly upset if we sent this back to the commission?
Yes, Your Honor, I think so. We've been fighting this battle. I think Mr. Hart and I are the last survivors of the march. And between us now, I think we have about 4.5 kids have been born since this thing began. We think that if this case goes back to the district court, and the district court does a substantial evidence review, an arbitrary, capricious review, he's going to uphold the commission's finding. If HLMP still wants this route, they can refile for certificate of convenience. Maybe then they'll finally do what they should have done on day one, and that is when you go through a historic area in a beautiful area like this, you are to use the existing right-of-ways that are there. We're not going to approve a power line in this part of the country that's going to create a big scar when there's absolutely no reason to put one there. These people they hired from Michigan, these route selection consultants, they know how to do it right. They did one for Monticello. There's a line that went by Monticello, and they used paralleling, and they used wood poles. They put these ugly old steel poles out there. I think the commission was to be commended in this case. Our 700 people have fought this battle long and hard, and we finally convinced the commission that this was just dead wrong. The HLMP should not be allowed to do this, that they needed to do it right, and they did not do their job here. And I think that the commission made the right decision. I think the basis is clearly stated. They'll know what to do next time. And we would ask that the court reverse and remand to the trial court so that this case can proceed, hopefully, to its ultimate conclusion.
Would you mind leaving your visual exhibits for the court?
Not at all.
Thank you. Both sides?
Certainly.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument and the first clause. The court will take a brief recess.
Please rise.